Kino drew a great breath and fought off his weakness. "No," he said, "you are right." And his will hardened, and he was a man again. "Go to our house and bring Coyotito," he said, "and bring all the corn we have. I will drag the canoe into the water, and we will go." He took his knife and left her. He stumbled toward the beach, and he came to his canoe. And when the light broke through again, he saw that a great hole had been knocked in the bottom, and a searing rage came to him and gave him strength. Now the darkness was closing in on his family. Now the evil music filled the night, hung over the mangroves, skirled in the wave beat. The canoe of his grandfather plastered over and over, and a splintered hole broken in it. This was an evil beyond thinking. The killing of a man was not so evil as the killing of a boat. For a boat does not have sons, and a boat cannot protect itself, and a wounded boat does not heal. There was sorrow in Kino's rage, but this last thing had tightened him beyond breaking. He was an animal now, for hiding, for attacking, and he lived only to preserve himself and his family. He was not conscious of the pain in his head. He leaped up the beach, through the brush line toward his brush house, and it did not occur to him to take one of the canoes of his neighbors. Never once did the thought enter his head any more than he could have conceived breaking a boat. The roosters were crowing, and the dawn was not far off. Smoke of the first fires seeped out through the walls of the brush houses, and the first smell of cooking corn cakes was in the air. Already the dawn birds were scampering in the bushes. The weak moon was losing its light, and the clouds thickened and curdled to the southward. The wind blew freshly into the estuary, a nervous, restless wind, with the smell of storm on its breath, and there was change and uneasiness in the air. Kino, hurrying toward the house, felt a surge of exhilaration. Now he was not confused, for there was only one thing to do. And Kino's hand went first to the great pearl in his shirt, and then to his knife hanging under his shirt. He saw a little glow ahead of him, and then, without interval, a tall flame leaped up in the dark with a crackling roar, and a tall edifice of fire lighted the pathway. Kino broke into a run. It was his brush house, he knew. And he knew that these houses could burn down in a very few moments. And as he ran, a scuttling figure ran toward him, Juana, with Coyotito in her arms, and Kino's shoulder blanket clutched in her hand. The baby moaned with fright, and Juana's eyes were wide and terrified. Kino could see the house was gone, and he did not question Juana. He knew, but she said, "It was torn up, and the floor was dug. Even the baby's box turned out, and as I looked, they put the fire to the outside." The fierce light of the burning house lighted Kino's face strongly. "Who?" he demanded. "I don't know," she said. "The Dark Ones." The neighbors were tumbling from their houses now, and they watched the falling sparks and stamped them out to save their own houses. Suddenly, Kino was afraid. The light made him afraid. He remembered the man lying dead in the brush beside the path, and he took Juana by the arm and drew her into the shadow of a house away from the light, for the light was danger to him. For a moment he considered, and then he worked among the shadows until he came to the house of Juan Tomas, his brother, and he slipped into the doorway and drew Juana after him. Outside he could hear the squeal of children and the shouts of the neighbors, for his friends thought he might be inside the burning house. The house of Juan Tomas was almost exactly like Kino's house. Nearly all the brush houses were alike, and all leaked light and air, so that Juana and Kino, sitting in the corner of the brother's house, could see the leaping flames through the wall. They saw the flames tall and furious. They saw the roof fall and watched the fire die down as quickly as a twig fire dies. They heard the cries of warning of their friends and the shrill, keening cry of Apollonia, wife of Juan Tomas. She, being the nearest woman relative, raised a formal lament for the dead of the family. Apollonia realized that she was wearing her second-best head shawl, and she rushed to a house to get her fine new one. As she rummaged in a box by the wall, Kino's voice said quietly, "Apollonia, do not cry out. We are not hurt." "How do you come here?" she demanded. "Do not question," he said. Go now to Juan Tomas and bring him here and tell no one else. This is important to us, Apollonia. She paused, her hands helpless in front of her, and then, Yes, my brother-in-law, she said. In a few moments, Juan Tomas came back with her. He lighted a candle and came to them where they crouched in a corner, and he said, Apollonia, see to the door and do not let anyone enter. He was older, Juan Tomas, and he assumed the authority. Now, my brother, he said. I was attacked in the dark, said Kino, and in the fight, I have killed a man. Who? Asked Juan Tomas quickly. I do not know. It is all darkness and shape of darkness. It is your pearl, said Juan Tomas. There is a devil in this pearl. You should have sold it and passed on the devil. Perhaps you can still sell it and buy peace for yourself. And Kino said, Oh, my brother, an insult has been put on me that is deeper than my life. For on the beach, my canoe is broken, my house is burned, and in the brush a dead man lies. Every escape is cut off. You must hide us, my brother. And Kino, looking closely, saw deep worry come into his brother's eyes, and he forestalled him in a possible refusal. Not for long, he said quickly. Only until a day has passed and the new night has come. Then we will go. I will hide you, said Juan Tomas. I do not want to bring danger to you, Kino said. I know I am like a leprosy. I will go tonight, and then you will be safe. I will protect you, said Juan Tomas, and he called, Apollonia, close up the door. Do not even whisper that Kino is here.